Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from the fifth canto, chapter 17, text number 21. Chapter is entitled Descent to the River Ganges. Yamahurasya siti janmad sangshayam. Tribir vihinang yamanantang rishayaha. Naveda siddhartang eva quachit sitam. Sorry. Bhumandalam murda sahasradamasu. Matajis. Ahu, they said, Asya, of the material world, Stiti, the maintenance, Janma, creation, Sangyamam, annihilation, Chibi, these three, Vihinam, without, Yam, which, Anantam, unlimited, Ishaya, all the great sages, Na, not, Veda, fields, Siddha Artam, a mustard seed, Eva, like, Quachit, where, Stitam, situated, Bhu Mandalam, the universe, Morda Sahasra Dhammasu, and the hundreds and thousands of hoods of the Lord. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Lord Shiva continued, all the great sages accept the Lord as the source of creation, maintenance, and destruction, although He actually has nothing to do with these activities. Therefore, the Lord is called unlimited. Although the Lord in His incarnation as Shesha holds all the universes on His hoods, Each universe feels no heavier than a mustard seed to him. Therefore, what person desiring perfection will not worship the Lord? Purport. The incarnation of the Supreme Personality Godhead known as Shesha or Ananta has unlimited strength, fame, wealth, knowledge, beauty, and renunciation. As described in this verse, Ananta's strength is so great that the innumerable universes rest on his hoods. He has the bodily features of a snake with thousands of hoods, and since his strength is unlimited, all the universes resting on his hoods feel no heavier than mustard seeds. We can just imagine how insignificant a mustard seed is on the hood of a serpent. In this connection, the reader is referred to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 5, Verses 117 through 125. There it is stated that Lord Vishnu's incarnation as the serpentine Anantashesha Naga supports all the universes on his hoods. By our calculation, a universe may be very, very heavy, but because the Lord is an Ananta, unlimited, he feels the weight to be no heavier than a mustard seed. Om Gyane Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmili Tangena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaye Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Prahladananda Swami Tamune Namo Vishnu Padaye Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tamune Namaste Sarasvati Deve Korvani Pcharne Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paschati Adhesha Charne. So first of all, I'd like to apologize for being in front of everyone so soon since my last class. Somebody else was scheduled, but they had to cancel, so I didn't have time to find somebody else to do it. So I'm sorry. But the shastras are just so amazing. Every single time I read a verse for giving a class on, I think, wow, this verse is so appropriate. This verse is so amazing, so important in our spiritual life. That's exactly how I was feeling about this one. And in fact, this whole section that we're on right now. Right now we're learning about the abode of Lord Shiva, which is Ilavritta Varsh. First it was described how Lord Shiva is the only male in that area. For other reasons described later on in the Bhagavatam. Because his wife, sometimes she's exposed there. And she doesn't like other men seeing her in such a condition. And so she turns any men that go there into women. And so he has hundreds of millions of maidservants there. They're actually the maidservants of his wife, but they're there serving him also. And then it's described what he does while he's there. He's meditating under this giant banyan tree. That's described elsewhere, the banyan tree. But more importantly, it's described what he's meditating upon. As Prabhupada explains, many people, they have heard about Lord Shiva. They may have seen some form of him. They understand that he's sitting down, meditating. But meditating upon what? So many people in this material world, they think that when you meditate, you just sit somewhere. And don't do anything. You just sit. And so consequently, there's a class of people that are willing to cheat others and just sit. And fool the world into thinking that they're great transcendentalists, great spiritual aspirants. But they're just sitting, and their mind is rotting away. I remember one time, even before I was an aspiring devotee, I was living up in Santa Barbara, and we had some structures on the side of the house I was staying in. And we used it for other purposes. But just to fool the landlady into thinking that it was something else, one of the residents of the house just sat there on the cushion, and then she thought that he was meditating. But he was just sitting there, he wasn't doing anything. And she thought, oh, he's meditating, I gotta be quiet. And then she was tiptoeing around. You know, so this is going on. Many people are fooled by cheap imitations. But Lord Shiva, he's not a cheap imitation. What is he doing? He's meditating upon Sankarshan. And this is what these prayers that we're reading here in this last section of the 17th chapter, this is actually his meditation. It's not that he's verbalizing these. This is what he's thinking. This is what he's meditating upon. And this part right here is extremely amazing, describing Ananta Sesh. So we may ask, well, what's the connection here? Why is he describing Lord Ananta Sesh? Well, I mean, this is extremely significant, because Lord Shiva, he's talking about how we're entangled by these modes of material nature, and how so difficult it is to get beyond those modes. How even the great demigods, even they're not beyond these modes of nature. Lord Shiva was even created by the anger of Lord Brahma, showing how Lord Brahma is tainted by the mode of passion. He tried to control his anger. He asked his sons, his first sons, the four Kumaras, he asked them to take up grihastha life, help him in his task of populating the universe. But they refused. They had a higher purpose. They wanted self-realization. So they refused. They said, no. We want to keep these child bodies and attain perfection. We don't want to be agitated by the bodily changes that will happen later on in life. So we want to keep these bodies and remain celibate. And Lord Brahma, because he's in the mode of passion, he became so angry, he couldn't control his anger. And Lord Shiva, or Rudra, came out from between his eyebrows. And so here, Ananta Sesh is being described. And Ananta Sesh, he has all the opulences. It's described that he's so strong that he doesn't even notice the weight of the universe on his hood, which is pretty amazing. It references in the purport a section from the Adi Lila. So I would like to read those translations, just to give a more full understanding of the glories of Lord Ananta Sesh. It's from Adi Lila 5, 117 through 125. That same Lord Vishnu, in the form of Lord Sesha, holds the planets upon his heads, although he does not know where they are, for he cannot feel their existence upon his heads. His thousands of extended hoods are adorned with dazzling jewels surpassing the sun. The universe, which measures 500 million yojanas in diameter, rests on one of his hoods like a mustard seed. So 500 million yojanas, that's 4 trillion miles in diameter, each universe. 4 trillion miles, and it's so insignificant, he doesn't even know where on his hood it is. Can you imagine? It's beyond comprehension. Each universe is so vast and unlimited. With our insignificant scientific instruments, we're still speculating. I think the universe is this big. No, maybe it's this big. Well, we're seeing this red shift in the telescopes here, so maybe it's this big, and maybe this, maybe that. Nobody even knows. It's so vast and unlimited, nobody even knows the extent of the universe. And yet it's so insignificant, Lord Ananta Sesh doesn't even know where on his hood it's located. It's like you have a little speck of dust on your head. You don't know where that speck of dust is. It's so insignificant. It's just you don't even know it's there. And that Ananta Sesh is the devotee incarnation of Godhead. He knows nothing but the service to Lord Krishna. With his thousands of mouths, he sings the glories of Lord Krishna. But although he always sings in that way, he does not find an end to the qualities of the Lord. The four Kumaras hear Srimad Bhagavatam from his lips, and they in turn repeat it in the transcendental bliss of love of Godhead. He serves Lord Krishna assuming all the forms, umbrella, slippers, bedding, pillow, garments, resting chair, residence, sacred thread, and throne. He is thus called Lord Shesha, for he has attained the ultimate end of servitude toward Krishna. He takes many forms for the service of Krishna, and thus he serves the Lord. That person of whom Lord Ananta is a kala, or a part of a plenary part, is Lord Nityananda Prabhu. Who, therefore, can know the pastimes of Lord Nityananda? So it's interesting, in this brief description, it also describes how he instructed the four Kumaras in the Srimad Bhagavatam. For the Kumara Sampradaya, this is where they get their information from. And it's interesting in this connection because we're in the chapter called The Descent of the River Ganges. And the four Kumaras, they actually are transported through the Ganges all the way down to the Patala regions where Lord Ananta Shesha is. It's described later on in the Bhagavatam that great sages and great saintly people, they can travel anywhere in the universe through the waters of the Ganges. And so to put this all in context, let's consider here. So Lord Sesh, Lord Ananta Sesha, he's unlimited in his opulences. He's unlimited in his the number of heads he has. He's unlimited in his ability to glorify the Lord. He's unlimited in his devotion, because he's also the devotee incarnation of Godhead. Just like Govardhan Hill. Govardhan Hill is not only the greatest devotee of Lord Krishna, but he's also Krishna himself. And Ananta Sesha is not only a devotee of Krishna, but he's also a kala expansion, a portion of a plenary portion of Lord Nityananda. And yet here we are, in this material world, overburdened with all these unlimited problems, thinking that our insignificant problems are the end of the world. What's going to happen if I lose my job? What's going to happen if the circumstance in my life changes? What's going to happen if I need a different place to live? What's going to happen if this thing or that thing? It's unlimited problems in this material world. Unlimited problems to occupy our consciousness, to take away our meditation from the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Recently at the Coachella concert, I met this one student, and he was Indian-bodied, and he said, "Oh, I know about this. I was brought up in this." I said, "Oh, that's very wonderful. So why don't you take a Bhagavad Gita?" He said, "Oh, no, it's okay. My mother has one." I said, "Well, that's fine for your mother, but what about yourself? You live separate from your mother. What's the use of your mother having a Gita if you don't have one?" He said, "Oh, well, you know, I know about this. I know where the devotees are. I can always go get one whenever I'm ready for it." I said, "Well, this is foolishness. When are you ever going to be ready for it? You know, here you are thinking that you're in school and you don't have time for the Bhagavad Gita now because you're in school. You have to study. Okay, so once your school gets done or nearly done, then you may think you may have time. But then when you graduate, you'll be so consumed with the thought of career. Now I need to make some money. Now I need to pay off the $100,000 that I'm in debt. How are you going to have time then? And then once you get a little bit situated in your career, you have some money, have some cash flow, not quite so much in debt. Then you start thinking, oh, but then I'd like to get married. Then I need kids. And then you start getting all worked up about that. And then you don't have time for self-realization then because you're so wrapped up in your griha, maintaining the wife, maintaining the kids. I don't have time to read Bhagavad Gita because now I have my family to take care of. And then your family grows up. And then you're worried about retirement. Oh, I can't worry about Bhagavad Gita now. I have to save for my retirement. Then you retire. And then by the time you retire, your body's so broken, so much falling apart, that now you're just in distress. I have cancer. I'm taking chemotherapy. I'm taking pills. I can't think about Bhagavad Gita. I'm in too much pain. Say, when are you ever going to have the chance to read Bhagavad Gita if you use this philosophy? He said, oh, okay, yeah, I guess I should take it. You know, so the point is we have to make time for spiritual life. We have to make time for Krishna consciousness. And more importantly, here Lord Sesha is. He's holding the heaviest weight upon his head, and it's so insignificant, he doesn't even know where it is. So what about our problems? Our problems are insignificant in comparison. It doesn't even matter. What's the worry? You know, here we are, a tiny little insignificant entity in this tiny little town, in a tiny little part of town, known as Palms District, inside a tiny little city known as Los Angeles, inside a tiny little nation known as the United States, inside a tiny little planet known as the Earth planet, inside a tiny little section of the planetary systems known as Marti Loka, inside a tiny little section of the stalk of the lotus stem that Lord Brahma was born on, inside the tiniest of all the unlimited universes, inside a quarter portion of a section of a sky in the spiritual world. And here we are thinking our problems are important. What this shows actually is many things. One, it shows a lack of faith. I was actually reading in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter, text number 3, where Krishna is talking about faith, how one has to have faith to make progress in spiritual life. One has to have faith in Krishna, and Prabhupada explains the definition of faith in that purport. Prabhupada says that faith is the complete conviction that simply by serving the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, one can achieve all perfection. This is what faith is. Faith isn't that, well, Krishna, I believe in Krishna. Who cares about your belief in that regard? Krishna is axiomatic. He's self-evident. He doesn't require belief. Faith is actually understanding that by serving Krishna, all perfection will be attained. And that's where we don't have faith. That's why we think we have problems. And that's from our unlimited conditioning here in this material world. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16, text 7, pravritting cha nivritting cha jana na vidor asuraha na shaucham napi karacho asatyanteshu vidyate. Those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Neither cleanliness nor proper behavior nor truth is found in them. This is all of our upbringing. This is where we all come from. We're all demoniac in nature. I don't know about everyone. I shouldn't say that. But I know myself in particular. This is where I come from. This is the cultural conditioning that I've had for so many lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. So many millions of years. So I don't know what's to be done. I don't know what's not to be done. So how can I have faith that I'll achieve perfection through Krishna consciousness? Therefore, the world is going on and we think that we have so many problems. Because we don't even know what's to be done. Everyone wants perfection, but nobody knows where perfection can be had. That's why so many people that are trying for scientific advancement, they're trying through artificial means to create some perfect society. And through those different desires for perfection, they're actually doing quite abominable things. I saw recently how Richard Dawkins, a very infamous atheist, he's trying to hijack the Pope. When the Pope visits London, I'm not sure if it's London, but somewhere in the UK, when the Pope visits the UK, he's going to try to arrest the Pope on grounds of, what is it? Crimes against humanity. You know, all in the name of achieving perfection. People have no idea what perfection is. They think, reject all ideas of God, and we can attain perfection with our own hands. By manipulating our genes, we can artificially engineer a perfect human that can live forever, will never have disease, will never experience suffering. By our hard labor, by our perfect understanding of material nature, of how molecules are combining. But we can never achieve this. Our scientific advancement has brought us nothing of any noteworthy attention. People may argue saying, oh, but we've made so many advances in solving the problems of life. We've cured so many diseases. Our lifespan is increasing. But none of that's the case. For every disease that they so-called cure, which they don't even eradicate entirely, they may cite some cases like polio or smallpox, but those still exist. It's not that they eradicated it. You go to some places and polio is still present as anything. There's still smallpox, there's still the Black Plague. They have no potency in killing any of these things. And last time I checked, I don't see so many people living to 100 years in age. Just look around you. Look at your peers. For those of you that are a little bit older, how many are dropping off at ages around 50 or 60? I know my grandfather, he died when he was 60. His grandfather died when he was in his 50s. I don't see the lifespan being increased. And if you take into account all the abortions, all the thousands and thousands of children being killed even before they reach their first year of age, that lowers down our average lifespan tremendously. It puts it around, 20 or 30 years old probably. Which is ridiculous. And they're claiming that we're advancing our civilization, extending our lifespan. Then they extol the glories and virtues of the educational system. Well, look at the educational system. How many kids graduating from Los Angeles Unified School District can even read? It's a sad fact. Both my parents are educators. One is a principal at a high school and another is a vice principal at a different high school down in San Diego. They know the statistics for what's going on in the public education system. It's nothing to be proud of. And this is all because we come from this demonic background, thinking that by our own ability, we can achieve all perfection in life. We have no faith in God. We have no faith in Krishna. We're faithless people, faithless demonic society. And because of this, it's impossible to get beyond the stringent dictates of the laws of nature. Daivi hesha gunamai mamamaya duratiya mameva ye prapadyante mayametam tarantite. This divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is difficult to overcome. For those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. This is what's required. So as aspiring devotees, we really have to take the Shastras to heart. We really have to imbibe. We have to bathe in the transcendental waves of the texts of these Shastras, bathe our intelligence in these teachings, and really listen to it. It's not just some hypothetical thing, maybe this happens, maybe that happens. No, this is practical. These things are to be applied practically in our life. And it's not just saying it just to say some flowery words or just to glorify themselves. Oh, look what a great personality I am, this thing or that thing. No. They're saying these things for our benefit. Lord Shiva, he doesn't have to share what his personal meditation is. We're reading here, this is his personal meditation. This is his transcendental bliss. This is what's going on inside his head. And he's sharing this with us for our benefit. So we can get extricated from these stringent laws of material nature. So we're not suffering so much. So we really have to grab a hold of these teachings and really apply it within our lives. And it'll make our life much, much easier. Not only that, though, we have to go one step further. Because we can't stop just with ourselves. That's the first step. That's very important. But part of the process also, as it's explained in this part, though, is referenced in the purport from the CC, about how Lord Sesha, he's a part of a plenary portion of Lord Nityananda. So we have to follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. Lord Nityananda is one of the previous acharyas. So we have to really imbibe their mood, take up this process, and share this process. Because if even we as aspiring devotees are experiencing difficulty, what to speak about those rotting in the material world? How much difficulty are they suffering from? Are they experiencing? So we really have to share these teachings with others. We have to develop a little bit of compassion and share this with other people. You know, just take a book. It's a simple thing. Take a book and talk to someone. You know, don't get nervous about it. It's just another person. They're in the same boat that we are. They're suffering from their material senses, from material nature. And just talk to them. Be friendly with them. Be personal. And then share these teachings. Because otherwise, what chance do they have? There's nobody in the material world giving any information on the perfection of life. And so we really need to take this process up and share these teachings with others. And then we'll see a transformation of the world. So it's 8:10 right now. If there's any comments or questions, Prema?
Very nice class, thank you. You said about faith. Can we say then, can I say about myself or everybody else, you cannot have faith in Krishna's teaching, in Srila Prabhupada books, if you don't know them, if you don't understand them. So the degree how much you immerse yourself in Srila Prabhupada books, to that degree you have actually faith.
Well, immersion in Prabhupada's books, that is part of the process, that's very important. But more importantly is actual experience. Because jnana alone doesn't do so much for you. Jnana is just book knowledge. Jnana is what you get just from reading something.
No,
what's important is the vijnana.
I know what you're saying, but still, you know, vijnana is in Prabhupada books. If you imply them, you can get vijnana. But if you don't know what is in them, if you don't study them, I speak to myself. How you can have faith? How you can, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
You have to read. If you don't know what is in Bhagavad Gita, this chapter, that chapter, how you can have faith?
Yeah, that's why I said that the jnana, that's part of the process. You're right. In order to have that faith, you have to know what's possible. You have to know what is worth aspiring for. You have to know what's in the books. But then to make that faith steady and fixed, nishta, then you have to. It requires experience.
You have to experience
that knowledge, and then your faith becomes rock solid. Nothing can budge it.
Okay, but beginning is study Srila Prabhupada books.
Yeah, that's the beginning. Yeah.
That's point. Thank you.
Panabhata Prabhu.
Very, very nice class, Omkar. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Just one thing I wanted to mention in that connection, that definition of faith that you gave from the third verse of the ninth chapter, in that purport also, Srila Prabhupada states that faith is created by the association of devotees. Mm,
yeah, that's right.
In regard to his question, Srila Prabhupada said that philosophy is good. Higher than philosophy is the practical application, just to support what he said.
Yeah. And that's also another reason why I appreciate Sankirtan so much. Whether it be Harinam Sankirtan or Brihat Mridanga Sankirtan, book distribution. Because it gives you, very quickly it gives you, that practical experience of Krishna consciousness. You know, very, very quickly it gives you that understanding. It teaches you that Krishna is God, and He is alive, and He is in control of everything that's happening. So it very quickly cements the philosophy that you're reading. Prabhupada said many times, not if you want to be recognized, but if you want to very quickly be recognized by Krishna, then take up this preaching process. You can look it up in the Vedabase. Bhrigupati Prabhu is the one who turned me on to that. He always has these nice realizations about how to achieve the mercy of the Lord in the most quick and direct way possible. And every single time Srila Prabhupada talks about this, it's always in connection with preaching. It's because preaching is the most important way of accessing the mercy of Lord Nityananda. And that's what we're all hankering after. We're all hankering after the mercy of the Lord. And so everyone, whether we're doing it directly or we're doing it indirectly, like an army, not everyone in the army is on the front line, but everyone in the army is thinking, we're fighting this enemy. So everyone, whether it be the logistics people, whether it be the cooks, whether it be the transportation, whether it be the strategists, whether it be the special ops guys, whether it be the frontline soldiers, they're all on the same page. They're all thinking, meditating on, how can we further our aim? Our aim here in this Krishna consciousness movement is to satisfy and please the previous acharyas. And the way of pleasing them is by preaching the glories of Krishna to every town and village. So this should be our aim. This should be what our meditation is. This is the page that we should all be on. And we should see how all aspects of the temple work together harmoniously for this purpose. And by doing so, we can all have access to that mercy. Is there anything else? Brew in the back?
Houses, city, works.
What was that?
Why can't devotees distribute Srila Prabhupada's books to houses?
Oh, they do.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Sounds ecstatic.
Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.